live.
A podcast of the cinema. Am I even on? Yeah, it's okay.
Oh, now who's got the
sorry?
With the
I no, I have the that I have the janky you. Mic. I'm good. A podcast of the cinema. Everybody,
say your name.
I'm Alonzo Duralde, and you're Dave White.
Yes.
And there are donuts on the table, which can only mean that there are guests.
Well,
come on.
Well, yes. I mean, but there's always something foodish.
Of course.
On the table.
But, you know,
but we bring,
donuts
we,
are for company.
Donuts are for company.
Yes.
That is a fact.
Our company today, we're so excited to have with us.
Is real gay.
It's super, super gay. Friends of the show, Del Shores and Emerson Collins are here.
Yay!
From the upcoming A Very Sordid Wedding. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. I came with my super gay cape.
Just don't sit down, because that stuff wrinkles like you wouldn't believe.
It's more than just now there are four gays at the table. It's that. There's all kinds of gay
content
going on this week, because we've got the Sordid Wedding to talk about, and
there's a new documentary called The Freedom to Marry,
and another new documentary called Kiki.
Yes.
That we have, and then
Catfight.
Logan. Well, Catfight too. Catfight. There's nothing gay about Catfight except that Maria Magenti, or no, who wrote Catfight?
No,
Maria Magenti wrote Before I Fall. And she's lesbian-ish?
Anne Heche and Alicia Silverstone are girlfriends in Catfight.
Oh, that's right, because there's lesbians in Catfight.
Yeah. Right. So it's just gay, right. gay this
so week. Much.
Right.
All right, so Very Sordid Wedding is, y'all are about to premiere in Palm Springs. Give us the skinny on that, and Del, for people who don't know, maybe explain your special relationship that makes you the king of Palm Springs.
Well, the original movie ran at the Camelot Theaters for 96 weeks.
Yee.
So
that movie is called
Sordid Lives.
Yes. Right.
So that was like 17 years ago.
Yeah.
And we just love Palm Springs, so we knew that we had to return there to premiere the movie at the Camelot Theaters where it all started. It just, you know, because Palm Springs is such a mecca for vacation,
mm-hmm.
they adopted that movie and just said, let me introduce you to my child. And so by the time the DVD came out 3 years later, because, you know, we weren't going to release the DVD until after the run, and
right.
it just kept running and running.
And nobody has a theatrical window like that anymore.
Nobody, yeah. So we were very, very fortunate. They gave me a star down there.
Nice.
If I needed, you know, a dose of self-esteem, I just go to a bar in Palm Springs, and usually take Ann Walker to make sure I'm recognized, you know.
Right. So like Sally Field,
LaVonda.
Sally Field going to the mall.
Yes, Palm Springs is my mall.
Fair enough.
So when it was running, when it was playing in Palm Springs for that amount of time, was it visit? I'm hearing a buzz. Did someone's phone just go off?
Probably yours.
No, mine's off the table.
Okay.
Oh, I think it's mine.
I'll tell you.
Not to worry.
I'm going to turn it off.
No, I just thought it was yours, actually.
Ooh,
okay, so who was going? Was it locals going again and again and again, or was it tourists?
You know, it was both. It was a combination. Okay. But it truly was the locals that started the storm, if you will. I remember the LA Times did this article that was on the cover of the calendar when we still read. You know, the cover of the calendar.
Yeah, right.
And it said, the gays and the grays.
Yeah.
And it was truly the gays and the grays, and some of them merged with each other, that created that phenomenon down there. And you know, we were sort of unaware of it for a while. We kept hearing, oh, it's still playing down there. But we didn't know what it had become.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it was a year, and they wanted to have this big event for us, and how many of the cast, and we said, oh, well, let's just all go down there. So we all went down, and it was crazy walking into the Camelot Theaters, just lines, you know, down the street, and people dressed up like Sissy Hickey and Brother Boy and wearing lug nuts. They had this lug nut club, or, you know, but if those of you who don't know Sordid Lives, Sissy, the character, says about a large woman, you could reinforce that stool with lug nuts that she sits on. And so they were screaming out all the lines. It was sort of overwhelming for us. We had no idea that, and it continued to run, you know, over another
right.
year.
Yeah.
So, but what happened would then people would come in, and people, what's there to do? Oh, you have to see Sordid Lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was still running there. I mean, it had run, you know, Fort Lauderdale a year, Dallas a year, several.
I say, because this is very Texas. So, like, yeah. for Palm Springs is not the natural thing you would think of.
It was shocking. We were like, why? Mm. Why Palm Springs? But we took it.
You know? A similar phenomenon took place a few years later here in Los Angeles at the Music Hall with a Hungarian movie called Gloomy Sunday. And it was about people...
It's about the opposite of Sordid Lives as you can get.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Sordid Lives as you can get. It's a film about people living in you know, Europe during the beginning of World War II, and the impact of the song Gloomy Sunday on their lives. And that song is famous for suicides.
Like you do.
Yeah. And for some reason...
Iron Maiden has nothing on Gloomy Sunday.
For some reason, it ran at the Music Hall for over a year. And
a downer.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was
people
it was a
were
love
not
story.
Dressing up in
it was a love story.
Yelling lines back at the
but
screen.
But it was so immensely popular. After it had completed its theatrical run in every other art house in the country, it stayed at the Music Hall. And I knew about it because LA Weekly assigned me to go talk about, to go write about it. The cast and the director all showed up for a special screening after it had been there for forever, and the theater was packed. And it's been months. It's still, and then it played for a few more months. And I just thought, how do these things happen? And there's an audience somewhere that connects with what you've done.
It hits a vein with people, and it
an
truly,
underrepresented audience as well.
I think you're right.
Yes.
And I think for Sordid Lives, it, no matter where you came from, you had an aunt like Sissy, or you had an aunt like, or you wanted an aunt like Lavonda. And so many people right. said, you know, Latrell was my mother, and right. Latrell was my mother, so y'all yes. could really feel sorry for me.
Yeah.
But it was that connection, and also, it wasn't just a gay movie. People discover that, oh, I'm gay, but I can share this with my Southern family.
Yes.
Because that's what I hear.
No, it is the redneck My Big Fat Greek Wedding, I think, in terms of being super specific and thus ultimate,
universal.
Very universal.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, I remember seeing it when it came out. In fact, I reviewed it, I think, for iFilm.
Oh, I'm going to have to Google that and see what you said.
Wiped from the internet. Long ago wiped from the internet. But I liked it, and I remember thinking at the time that I didn't need the gay story because that wasn't the anti-gay subplot and the gay man who needed acceptance that wasn't necessary for me at the time. But what I did love about it, and what I remembered from Daddy's Dying, Who's Got the Will, was that it felt very specific to my background. Because you and I come from very similar backgrounds.
And I remember that review because we quoted your review.
Texas.
Yeah.
And deep kind of evangelical Christianity,
right.
Baptist kind of things. And so seeing those folks and seeing Beth Grant and thinking, well, that's my aunt.
Yeah.
And those are my cousins. And these are all the people I knew in Hobbs, New Mexico. And it's very much, it's such an identifiable and very specific thing.
And it's also, I also think that, you know, we've all gone to those funerals that just didn't go well.
Yes.
And I loved writing about, you know, that funeral that just, you just throw in everything that,
right.
that could go. And the silly things, you know.
Right.
Sometimes you write about the small moments in life, just about, that's what I like, I gravitate to. I stole that, the whole, in the first movie when they were fighting over whether Mama should have the mink stole on that was her favorite during the summer because it didn't make sense fashion-wise to one, but the other one felt it was her favorite. My aunt and my mother had a fight over my pawpaw being buried with his cowboy hat because my aunt felt that nobody would know him without that was his identity was
Correct.
That cowboy hat.
Right.
They finally compromised that he had it on his chest, you know, kind of holding it.
I think that's appropriate.
No, the whole y'all's joint background in evangelical Christianity, I find it really interesting, because I know online you get into it with the prayer warriors, and that all that comes up in a
that's
lot of
where
your
you work. And I diverge.
Yeah, you just
I don't have that energy anymore for that, and watching Sordid Wedding here in the house the other night, I thought, Dell will always fight for this. Mm. And I have stopped personally fighting for this. I no longer feel like it's my responsibility to change hearts and minds. My responsibility is to defeat them by any means necessary. And if they're my family and they have those feelings, then they get a pass because they're my family. Mm-hmm. We just don't talk about that stuff. But other folks out in the world, the anonymous people who come at you probably on the internet, no time.
You know, I
so I'm glad you're doing it.
I have to tell you, Dave, I don't do it to change their hearts and minds. Right. I do it to entertain those who love to see me quote scriptures.
Have a point.
And because people love my, I can't say it on the show, but P.S. Right. You know, letters that I write to them. And I also do it for those in those hinterlands, especially the kids who I want them to know I got their back, you know, and those people are wrong and I will prove they're wrong. Right. Watch this.
We talk about this
so
a lot.
You're very good at that. And like I say, I don't have the energy, but I've forgotten about the possible entertainment value.
Well, and I think we talk about that both of those things are important. You know, I think we all are activists or engage in based on our personalities. Yeah. And we have very different approaches in how we engage, that he's sort of that big firebrand out front. And I'm very much, I'll have a debate dialogue with someone that I know I'm not going to change their mind in order for other people watching to have ammunition in their own conversations.
Yeah.
And I think we need all of the different approaches to be successful.
Well, I've been chastised by my form of activism, by people in HRC or however. You're not helping us with screaming loudly and cussing at people. That's not the way to do it. And then there are people.
The minute HRC tells you you're doing it wrong, that means you're doing it right.
I mean, I don't want to bash HRC. Specific people organization I've gotten, I've not been asked to speak at an HRC function. I've been asked to speak at a lot of functions, but not an HRC. But I have been told you need to, that's not the way we change hearts. Blah, blah, blah. And I go, you know what? This is the way I do it. It's the only way I know to do it. And some people sit behind that computer and their only form of activism is to tell you what you're doing
right or wrong.
Yeah, I go, you're not an activist. You're just fill in the expletive.
Yeah, no, I'm a believer in good cop, bad cop, too. Like, if HRC wants to be the, three-piece suit, huggable version of gay activism, great. But then let's counter that with, punching Nazis in the face,
Let's not forget ACT UP, Yes, I mean, absolutely. Come on. And our heroes at Stonewall, let's not forget them.
Yeah. Well, and it takes both. It takes someone screaming loudly enough for everyone to pay attention, and then it takes a compromise-oriented person to achieve the definitive legislation.
Yeah, no, I'm all for if you have to scare them into doing the right thing and then them taking what they think is the easier path, I'll take it. But you got to scare them onto that path or they won't get on the path at all. That's sort of been my experience, at least. I don't know.
I'm good at scaring.
It's that basso profundo.
What's interesting about Sordid Wedding is, not that nobody dies at the end, but there is this sense of it that you're kind of, this feels like a last chapter. It feels like you kind of want to make sure everybody's okay. It's very compassionate that way.
I don't know if you like that part of it, but I felt it was. We talked about this. I wasn't going to return to Sordid Lives after the series. Demise of the series, how it went down. Right. It left me so defeated and not angry at Sordid Lives, but just a bad taste in my mouth. And creatively, I've never had a bad taste in my mouth with Sordid Lives.
Right.
But the fans kept saying, we want more,
we want more. Yes,
and
of course. Yeah.
I left all these cliffhangers, all these things that were not answered. And I got to say that it was what happened again, Dave, I mean, you're talking about the church and everything, and when we see progress, we also see the church rear its ugly, nasty self again. Yes. And I started seeing and hearing the rhetoric that I grew up with, and I thought, oh my God, those kids are hearing it again. Yeah. Those that, yeah. And I didn't have anybody to help me with that. Nobody, to listen to. So I thought, you know what? I got one more in me. Emerson and I formed this new company with our good friend Louise Beard, and something just popped. There, my voice is back in my head. But anyway, maybe that was just that was my. Well, it could be my own mental illness. I don't know. But anyway, I thought, you know, I have one more in me, and if we take control of it this time and do it business wise, our way, not just creatively, our way,
right,
I'll be okay with it. And I'm so lucky to have this man as a partner, and we have been able to do that.
And y'all are doing kind of a unique release where it's sort of a city by city setup.
We are. You know, there's the opportunity to build off the exposure in Palm Springs. Frankly, we're counting on the Palm Springs audience and their enthusiastic response to help us convince art house theaters across the country, you know, to give it an opportunity again. It's interesting, I've realized recently that 17 years since the original, there's an entire new generation of, you know, the LGBTQ community, of bookers, of people who aren't even aware in our own community of what a phenomenon this was. You know, it's not that the bookers, the digital editors at news media that have no idea what happened originally. And the concept of it, where we were in 2000, you know, just 3 years from Ellen coming out, Will and Grace just now on TV, Queer as Folk hadn't even premiered yet.
Right.
And so here was this coming out story in the South. And now to approach marriage equality as one of the first narrative pieces since The Decision, it's interesting that he's sort of always been at the forefront of a commentary in this very specific culture.
What I also find really compassionate about the movie, there's a great scene toward the end where Ty, who has come back home, tells the town beautician that he was sort of this role model, that he was this kind of visual example of like, oh yeah, you can be an adult gay man and there's a life there. And we'd never talk about those folks who don't leave for the big city, but who still also don't live in the closet. You know, it's like Ring of Keys in Fun Home. You know, there's those visuals that for little kids. I mean, I was in the suburbs. I wasn't like in the country or anything. But you know, you so rarely encountered like people who were clearly queer. But when you did, it made an impression. It was just this idea of, oh, okay, so like I'm not.
There is another one.
There's another one exactly, and they can have like successful lives.
You know? I love that little story. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I remember the actor Tuck Watkins went after some of what he thought were stereotypical characters. And I had him on our radio show, and he went after me for Brother Boy. And I'm sure he would go after me for Roger. But guess what? Roger existed and exist.
Yes.
And I wanted to tell his story, too. And I love that storyline that he sat there in Winters, Texas, and just ratting hair to all these old bigots, and yet there was somebody that he actually influenced, and I love that scene. I think it's beautifully
played.
What
has been the critical commentary about characters like Brother Boy and like the hairstylist Roger?
I've never had anything. I mean, you know, Sordid Lives, the original. I think you were our one good review. No, it got some good ones.
But did it not get good reviews?
It did not. And overall, you go to Rotten Tomatoes. Sordid Lives is 87% audience and 37% critics.
Really?
Yeah. Yes, it's my least. My films, I believe it's my least reviewed in a positive way, but by mainstream. Now, in the gay community, it was very positively reviewed.
No, when you said Tuck Watkins was going in on you about Brother Boy.
He was, you know, do you remember the flap when he went after, it was over Modern Family, and Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and he started more Facebook, I believe.
Is this a no fats, no femmes thing? What are we talking about?
It was a little bit. It was about the portrayal.
We can do better.
That can Jesse do on Modern Family.
And I was like, you know, and I had him, Emerson wasn't even with me on that show. And I was, and I like Tuck very much. Sure. Don't get, we had a, an intelligent conversation.
Yeah.
But I said, you know what, if you, are we supposed to just eliminate the Emmets from Queer as Folk? Because they exist.
Yeah.
Are we just supposed to, like, get rid of them? Right. And pretend they don't exist? I'm not going to do that.
Well, and I find it frustrating. What I love about Roger is for so long, those were the people, the visible people, because they couldn't hide. So they sort of bravely were there. So when people come for the quote-unquote queen stereotype, all I can think is those are the people who stood up because they had no choice before anybody else.
Exactly. Right. The ones who didn't pass. The, they, you know, that's why, you know, you were talking about Stonewall and the drag queens. It was like, I think for so long, that was the real bravery. Because because it was one thing if you could just sort of button it all down and, you know, marry a woman or at least just sort of stay under the radar. But yeah, when you are fabulous and you just, there's no tamping that down, you, that you're the toughest one of all, because you are not, you are, you know, I hate this expression, but you are living your truth 24/7.
Well, the authenticity is unhideable.
And sometimes they do have to hide it at, in gay bars and in their own sanctuary. But as a as an artist, as a writer, as a storyteller, I'm not going to not tell their story.
Absolutely.
And and I will defend that, you know.
All right, so if people want to find out when this movie is coming to them, where should they go online?
The easiest, averysortofwedding.com. All of the, you know, we've got Fort Lauderdale and Dallas and Los Angeles and Atlanta dates that we can release very soon, so, and then we'll go from there.
Awesome. And you have a Facebook page.
Yes, very active. We answer everything.
So, bless your hearts, we made you do homework. We wanted you to cover one of the movies that was...
Hang on, I'm not done talking about this movie.
I'm so sorry. Beg your pardon.
I was saddened to learn on the closing credits that Sarah Hunley, who plays Juanita, my favorite character, she passed away.
Yes. Just,
She did, between when we shot in Winnipeg last May, then this past fall, she fell and passed away. So her final contribution and performance is in this movie.
And she was, you know, it was a challenge to get her to Winnipeg. She was weak, and she, but she wanted to do it so badly. And I'm just glad that you. I mean, I love her in the film. It was an effort to shoot her, quite honestly. But
well, that effort paid off because, personally, I think that her wild non sequiturs, are they consistently? That's the funniest stuff. For me.
Yep.
And I, and because she's, the conversation is not at all, she's not participating in anyone's conversation except her own. And it's amazing
but
to watch her.
But if you really go back, because I always defend her, because I go, no, when she starts talking about, you know, the princes die in that first scene, it's because
that is true.
Odell said that, about some people don't. You had a mistress, and that triggers Camilla Parker.
There is a long.
There's always a truth
where it goes.
But it,
that is true.
Not many people can track it back. You know, but I can track it back.
Right.
I do have to say, as much as I adore Beth Grant as Sissy, and I thought she would be utterly irreplaceable, Dale Dickey is terrific.
Oh, thank you.
She wears that wig with pride.
Well, we were really lucky, you know, she made it possible for us to make this movie. So, you know, we're incredibly grateful. And of course, she did it on stage here in L.A. and won an award for it. She did it on the national tour. So she had experience interpreting that character for us.
Now, I know First Sorted Lives was a play first. Was there a stage version of Wedding, or is this
a movie, but I will probably adapt this into a play, because I'm getting so many requests for it. And, and you know, it makes me some royalties. You know?
Like, good luck with getting those 32 characters into a play.
We'll bring it down a little bit.
Oh, and one more thing. Thank you for, I just found his name.
Alex Ponovic.
Thank you for him.
Uh-huh. You can thank Caroline Ray for him, because, and his amazing audition for me. That was the craziest thing. You know, usually actors, they bring you somebody and it just does not work out. And she had been saying, you've got to cast him. She had played, she had done some movie. He's Canadian.
Right.
And so I went online and all he had was, you know, like these.
He does incredible action and
he plays brooding cops and soldiers and monsters and things like that.
And every now and then.
He's a giant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I said, I just don't know. And but of course, I said, I didn't know with Caroline Ray, and she auditioned for me. And so she said, can he call you? And so he called me and he said, hey, do me a favor. If you will just lay down the scene in your accent, in the accent that you want, let me work on it, and I will audition for you. And 2 hours later, his audition came in on my iPhone. We looked at it. I said,
right.
That's it.
Done
deal. And he was a sweet, sweet human being.
Right.
It's always nice to work with those.
I'm a huge Catherine Bayliss fan from Justin to Kelly.
Understandably. I saw it alone in a theater by myself.
On the way over here, I was just talking to her. God. We did a little thing last night.
She is, like, once I started, like, of course she's in a Del Shores movie. Like, why was she? It's like when Parker Posey was finally in a Woody Allen movie. It's like, why were they doing this 20 years ago? She's so in your world.
She was
a
child. That's why.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But she is so in the wheelhouse of Texas woman that you do.
I write for her. I'm developing a new series, and there is one of the leads. She is truly one of my very favorite actresses, and again, an amazing human. But she, it's so rare to find someone that pretty. Who can hit the comedy?
Yeah,
Leslie goes, she's a comedic genius.
she's funny, and she never seems concerned about being likable. Like, she is perfectly happy to be as, like, battle-axy as possible and let the audience just hiss her, and she's great.
Yeah.
Bonnie Bedelia loved and hated her.
Oh, perfect.
Just showing up at that door, she said, really, Del? The first day of shooting, this is what you greet me with.
But perfect for trophy wife, you know. That's my God. And our friend Tom Ford recently just sent me an email that just said,
the other Tom Ford.
The other Tom
yes.
Ford.
Right,
Attorney General Leslie Jordan. Like, when is he going to do a Jeff Sessions one-man show?
Because
eerie resemblance.
He's willing, and it's too bad that, you know, it didn't happen on SNL.
Kate McKinnon's doing it pretty well.
She's doing great, but Leslie said, well, if there's money involved, I'll do it.
All right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to transition before. Are we done? Are we good?
Now we may proceed.
Okay,
yes.
Awesome. So, new documentary this weekend that ties into all this that we're talking to is called The Freedom to Marry, and it is about the long-standing efforts of Evan Wolfson and the Freedom to Marry campaign to get marriage equality passed in the Supreme Court. And the movie focuses on Evan Wolfson's efforts and Mary Bonato from Gay and Lesbian...
Allies and Defenders.
I can remember what the A was. Yes. Yeah. When we were an advocate, at the advocate, we always used to refer to them as the good glad. Anyway, boy, we're crapping on all.
I'm about to release a movie, wanting these awards and wanting support from
the opinions expressed by Dave White and myself do not reflect Del Shore's commitment to the LGBT fundraising organization.
He just made a mistake. By coming onto a podcast with surly hosts.
That's right. Yeah. We're the
band. That's one of the reasons I'm here.
And we prefer unfiltered. We don't do filtered well either.
The bad gays. So, you know, there's... I mean, I can't... this doc... I think it serves its purpose in terms of very kind of straightforward storytelling. And as a profile of Evan Wolfson, I think it was really interesting.
It's a well-made film. And it is... based on what I think you're about to say next, it was for me a sort of necessary extra part of the story.
Yes.
Because the story I knew
was the other half.
Was the other half, yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little beforehand. There was the case against 8 a couple years ago, and it was premiered at Sundance and then aired on HBO. We just got done with When We Rise, the last chapter of which is all about the gay marriage fight. And both of those projects are mainly focused on the efforts of the American Federation for Equal Rights. I can forget what the F is. AFER, which was the group that was Rob Reiner and Dustin Lance Black and other folks. And it was David Boies and Ted Olson. I always get their...
Yeah.
Olson and Boies. The guys who litigated Bush v. Gore. So if you watch either that miniseries or that documentary, you think, oh, well, that's how gay marriage happened. And then this movie is all about, well, actually, there's this whole other part of the story, because Wolfson wrote his thesis at Harvard Law School about marriage equality back in 1983. He has pretty much devoted his life to getting us this far. And he and Mary Bonato were key players in this Supreme Court battle, but they're never mentioned in those other movies, and then those other guys aren't mentioned in this movie, and it's so...
That confuses me.
Yeah.
Why is there this division of storytelling?
I mean, I think it's, you know, we all tell the story we're involved in. It's sure. certainly our priority.
How I won the war.
Because I would think that the case against state, it was sort of that era is the final chapter. Mm-hmm. And what this is like all of the book that came before, all of the, you know, setbacks and advances and paying attention. But I really loved how far they delved into considering the state-by-state strategy, mm-hmm. you know, really mm-hmm. focusing on the hearts and minds in addition to the preparation for the Supreme Court battle. Because it did seem that in the 18 months leading up to it, so much of it was also about, it's not about winning even legislation in other states, it's telling enough of the story to enough people that yeah. it seems like the country is prepared for the decision we want.
Yeah, that yes. that aspect was different. And the idea of, like, if we're going to win over the Supremes, we have to show them that the public is there. Like, people talk about how, you know, when they talk about social engineering, in air quotes, the judges are usually the last ones on top of that. So they'll do stuff that they think reflects the national mm-hmm. mood. They don't necessarily want to set the national mood. And so, yeah, this was about how do we set that national mood?
And going after states, like, this state's ready. Yeah. This one's not ready.
And seeking out the right court cases. I found yes. that really interesting yeah, yeah. and informative for that right. we don't usually pay attention to, that it's yeah. finding the right complaint.
Well, even using the press, yep. I mean, remember when they went down to Texas and that beautiful mother yes. was confronting those bigots and they go, yes, she got on the news.
Exactly.
That's the face we need on the news, the mother.
Yeah.
And just hearts and minds change, I think, because putting a face, and they did that.
Totally, yeah. I mean, this goes all the way back to Harvey Milk, which is the idea of when people know that they know a gay person, that changes everything, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why so much of that strategy is that on that personal level and is about telling that story and coming out to friends and relatives. I wish this movie had been more, I didn't find it as emotional as I find most gay marriage documentaries. I'm a soft touch for this kind of thing. I even cried at stupid at When We Rise, which annoyed me for much of its running time. But in that last 20 minutes, when Cleve Jones sees Justice Kennedy bring up the children argument, but then turn it around to make it about how children with gay parents want their parents to get married, like, that hit me. And that, you know, and
was in this one, but it didn't resonate. But I it did get me emotional. Although where it got me emotional was where they kept coming back day by day. And I think that's because I lived that.
Oh, sure.
I remember every day waking up is it us
right.
today? This and my right. daughter being in the other room home from college.
Yes.
And waking her up and saying...
Oh, right. No,
I can't believe what just happened.
I actually found it impactful for that very reason, that here are two individuals that are very sort of workhorse oriented. You know, mm-hmm. they're not big media personalities. It's like right. we've been putting in the work, we do the effort, they speak well on the issues, but they're not like TV star quality
soundbite
personas,
kind of people, yeah.
yes.
Just sort of doing the work. So when Mary sat down to listen back to her argument and critique it, mm-hmm. you know, from this not extremely emotional person and feel the weight that she carried for the responsibility of standing up as the first person to speak on this thing that if it goes awry, we could be screwed for 20 years.
Right.
Yeah.
That was powerful in a totally different way than the other things that
happened. Okay.
You know, another moment that got me was the dad saying he's like Moses.
He's like liberating his people. Yeah, that was pretty
that
great.
Got me.
My favorite line is one of the lawyers for the Michigan the Michigan couple, where they have some terrible quote from the NOM people, the nationalization
Brown,
of marriage.
Yeah.
Well, the quote from the NOM people is, they can get married to someone of the opposite sex.
Yeah, and they cut to the lawyer saying,
because that makes perfect sense.
Said, gay people don't want to marry someone of the opposite gender. Because they're gay.
Yes.
They were actually Brian Brown and Janice Shaw Krause.
Oh,
they
yes.
were two of my favorites. Ooh. I just loved
Evan's mother was the star of the movie for me at the beginning when she said, "We thought he was so smart, we thought he'd be president." Then he came out, "Well, he might not be president,
but he'll be something."
It's like, the matter of fact, we just moved on. We just shifted the plan off.
Came up that hole.
I kind of wish they had circled back to Brian Brown and that awful speechwriter lady at the end.
Yes.
For a little some either.
I do.
I wonder
I
if they refused.
How you like me now?
Could be. Yeah.
I feel like
I
they
feel
got
they refused.
That interview early when he expected it to go well.
Yeah, sure.
And then
it was like stop returning the
calls. I did love that they included that because we don't often get those people. You know, seeing Tony Perkins and Brian Brown and people in their footage in it was great.
And Janis Shaw Krause. With that hair.
Oh,
see,
man.
I was going, honey, this is when I say, honey, you need to know gays. You need to know us. We could help
right
you.
You.
We could help you.
And the one thing that I loved about When We Rise and this movie, it's like, you cannot play the clip of George W. Bush saying we need a constitutional amendment to protect marriage enough times.
Right.
Like, I want that on a loop forever.
Yep.
Because now he's been going on this sort of, like, image rehabilitation tour. The like, look, I'm better than that guy. You know, and it's like, no. Our current guy is terrible, but you're still a war criminal and you did this crap with gay marriage, so away with you.
Right. The fact that somebody is worse does not improve your status.
Yeah, it doesn't make you good.
Oh, I just had this conversation with my good friend Tommy at the gym the other day. He goes, I think, you know, George W. Bush is, and I was like, not going to be okay with him.
No.
I like his daughter.
That he's
okay,
relaxed.
She's speaking it. Planned Parenthood. I'm okay with her. That's it.
Yeah, the fact that he's relaxed into his peepaw status, he doesn't seem to care anymore.
Right. Right. I've already gone off on this on the other show that we do, so not necessary to do it again here today. So what's next?
Did you guys happen to see Kiki at Outfest last summer?
I haven't seen it yet, although I went to the opening night party downtown where they did an actual ball here in L.A. with several of the cast members present. That's my not being in New York in the ball scene, but it was amazing to get to watch them and be a part of that sort of community experience.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't. We showed it at Outfest, and so I saw it beforehand, but the night of that screening, I was like at another theater and didn't get to see it, but apparently they had a whole like... I don't know if it was a demonstration or a voguing class, but yeah, a bunch of the dancers came and did all that stuff. But so yeah, so this is
it opened in Los Angeles last week. Mm-hmm. It's available.
Is it streaming?
Streaming?
Yes.
I don't know what service has it. iTunes, Amazon, whatever. But it is available. So you can watch it today if you want. It's in a way it is, you know, the
21st century is
the
Paris
child,
is burning.
You know, the child of Paris is burning.
Yeah.
But different because things have changed.
Well, sure.
And it's, first of all, it's formally a completely different kind of movie because Paris is Burning has this really beautiful structure. And this one feels a little looser and more scattered and there's not a lot of... It's not 101-ing you like Paris is Burning did.
Right.
It is assuming that you already know something about this world going in.
Yeah, I mean, because the thing about Paris is Burning is that it so bled into things like Drag Race and Top Model, and it is quoted so much in the culture.
The influence of Paris is Burning is so pervasive and has such a long reach now that...
They can assume you're going in with some idea.
They just pick it up and they're like, okay, here, well, we're the kids. And we speak with more theory on a daily, everyday kind of basis. And they're more political. And it's less about the old school idea of drag or even RuPaul's Drag Race idea of drag.
Right.
And a lot more about a kind of genderqueer idea of how do you feel like you're going to present yourself today?
Yeah, it's performance fluidity.
There's a guy in the movie who talks about being masculine and feminine whenever he feels like it. And he's telling the whole house that he runs the house. And he's saying, it doesn't matter what you're going to be or do or am today, just... You're serving realness all the time. And I like that idea. There's not the binary thing anymore of, you know, well, this is a man and he's going to do executive drag. And this is a woman and she's going to do, you know, extreme realness and infiltrate a Ford model.
Yeah, and they don't do the thing like Paris is Burning where they have the super specific categories of like, okay, here come the schoolboys or here come the stockbrokers. Like it's more, it's all in there and it's all what they're feeling in the moment and how they want to express. But the choreography is just extraordinary.
And I remember in Paris is Burning there being, you know, a very specific trans narrative about one character.
Right.
And here it's everybody on a spectrum, and the expression of it is trans experience is what the kids are saying in this film, and then you get to go to parents. You didn't see parents in Paris is Burning. No. You got parents now, and then my favorite thing is this mother who they go to and asking about her kid, and she says she's beautiful and sexy like me.
Yes.
and then her little brother's like, she's phenomenal. she's a role model. Like, oh God, this family, like, how lucky are you to have this family where everyone is like yes to you, like, all day every day.
Well, you know, again, you know who else saw Paris is Burning is probably those parents,
right? It's just it's a lovely movie.
Yes.
And it's exciting to watch things moving forward.
And while I'm not completely on board with the sort of retro accusations now that Jenny Livingston was exploitative of the community.
I don't buy that either.
I don't buy that.
No.
But this movie, even the one of the filmmakers is Swedish, but she worked directly with one of the sort of house leaders who's credited as a co-director.
Yes.
So it's very much the participants in the film are telling their own stories and are very much having a say in how their stuff gets presented. So
yes, this is certainly a more collaborative effort in terms of production.
Yes.
Because, you know, at the time of Paris is Burning, you know, the kids who were doing that thing weren't saying, you know what? We can make a documentary film about this. The world has changed, and the means of production has changed in such a profound way that, yeah, the kids now can say, yeah, we can make a documentary.
And certainly the idea then of participants in any documentary feeling like they would have a voice in it was not, that just wasn't done. I mean,
at the time of Paris is Burning, that was not considered something that would normally happen.
Yeah, it's like
the documentary filmmaker would go in and say, I'm going to make a documentary. Yeah, like, would you like to be a part of it?
Neiman Marcus didn't have a say in how the store came out.
Yes.
You know? Well, and from the most basic level of access to the equipment, you know, with the way we make films now, and of course communities having greater voices and the ability to guide your representation, that's amazing. I think looking backwards and judging the circumstances as they were doesn't serve as great a purpose as celebrating the access and telling your own stories.
No, we all have a movie studio in our pocket now, as Dan Savage always likes to say. Well, actually, he likes to warn parents, your kids all have a porn studio in their pocket.
That too.
But I just have to say, though, I recently saw a web series, and someone did it. I thought, you know, just do a little work and understanding the 180. Don't make me see your character flop from what, you know. Like everybody can make a movie, but I don't know that everybody should make a movie.
No question.
Very much
there.
So.
Oh, now, trust here's me, the thing. I've been programming film festivals. I'm with you on that one.
One thing I did not see in Paris is Burning that I did see in this one is you get dinner now at the ball. This whole buffet of like chicken and macaroni and cheese. I thought, I'm going. to that.
I thought all the balls in Paris is Burning, didn't they like start at 2 a.m. or something?
Yes. I don't know. That was my impression. The kids now have it more together.
Yes.
And they make...
If there's catering,
they make
for
dinner
sure.
happen.
Well, I think part of it, you see, it's
a
result
eating.
Of...
I mean, it's good.
Back then, a lot of it was about people who were rejected by a home or family finding and creating a new space for themselves and claiming and planting a flag. And with the evolution we have now, it's a celebration. I think what you were talking about gender identity and the ability to play with it and celebrate it and create it at all different levels.
Once the grandmother started coming, then there was food.
Yes. He said, I need a snack if I'm going to be here.
You know, it might very well be that mom.
Yes.
You know, who just showed up, well, y'all got to eat. Right. So.
All right, real quick, I'm going to knock out the last word, which was terrible.
Have either of you seen this terrible movie?
No, it sounds like you just had the last word.
Yeah.
Do it.
I adore Shirley MacLaine. I adore Shirley MacLaine. I just presented her with a Career Achievement Award at LA Film Critics. So I was really excited that she had a new movie coming out with Amanda Seyfried, and it was getting a big release. It's not good. She plays a cranky old lady who decides that she wants to have input in how her obituary is going to read. So she hires the woman who writes the obits for her local paper. She's sort of impressed by how this writer is able to make terrible people sound great afterwards. So she hires her to write her obituary while she's still living so she can sign off on it, which is a total Dave White move.
I don't find any problems with this, this premise. I think it's
I'm loving it so far.
No, it's a great idea. So anyway, so then of course the writer starts talking to all the people in this woman's life, and they all hate her. They all have terrible things to say about her. So the woman realizes she has to like touch someone's life, mend family fences, all this stuff before she dies so that she can have a good obituary. All sounds great, but there is not one honest emotion in this entire movie. It is so contrived and just so artificial. And, you know, there's like she starts mentoring a little black girl, and it's like she's such a prop in the film, it's not even funny. There's a, you know, she goes to work for an indie radio station and has these googly-eyed conversations with Thomas Sadowski about like the Kinks and vinyl albums, and they don't ring true at all. And even worse, it's directed by Mark Pellington, who is an actual filmmaker. You know, he did Arlington Road and Mothman Prophecies. He's done a ton of television. It's not even like, and I don't want to say slick, but sort of competently put together. It's that thing where, you know, when you're at a film festival and it's somebody's kind of rough first film, and there's those scenes that end like 3 seconds early and it's a little jarring, or the camera's in a weird place, or the lighting is up. Like, there's all these moments where I thought, who made this thing? This looks like it cost 10 cents, and you know how to make these movies. You've got Shirley MacLaine, and this is just awful. So yeah, not good.
Like the same character in Bernie, except don't have Jack Black.
Just a much worse film. You know, or Terms of Endearment. Like it's cranky Shirley MacLaine, which is great.
She's good to see it.
But yeah, they don't give her, the lines aren't funny, and the relationships aren't believable, and
I was going to go with you the night of the press screening, and then I thought, no, you know, I don't feel up to seeing a movie tonight. And then you came home, and I thought, oh, boy, I'm glad I didn't go.
Dodged.
Then I saw the trailer, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm being offended by this trailer. And so, yeah, happy I dodged that one.
Mm.
Yeah. There's also, you have not seen Catfight?
I have seen Catfight.
Have you all seen Catfight?
Mm-hmm. I have not.
Also streaming.
I saw one in a parking lot over at Ralph's.
Yeah. This one is
the last kombucha.
Owner Tuchel.
Tuchel, yes.
Yeah.
He did a movie called Applesauce a couple years ago.
This stars Anne Heche and
Sandra Oh
and Alicia Silverstone. Sandra Oh's character is rich and entitled. She's married to a defense contractor. She lives in Manhattan. She has a kid who wants to be an artist, and she's actively discouraging him from going to art school. She even says to him early in the film, you can be whatever you want, just not this. And so she's a terrible person, and that's how the film sets her up.
And a wine mom, as you pointed
and
out.
And a wine mom as well, yes. The
wine, you say
wine, yeah.
She likes
constantly
At first, I thought you said wine.
That's all moms.
constantly drinking wine, and Anne Heche is a struggling artist who makes stridently political art, and her girlfriend is Alicia Silverstone, and Anne Heche and Sandra Oh went to college together. They've always hated each other. Alicia Silverstone is a caterer and inducts Anne Heche to help her be a server one night at a party. Big fancy party. Rich people. Sandra Oh is there. Mm. So these two women who haven't seen each other since college and who hate each other, they reunite. And within seconds, there are these like simmering insults that they've kept going for years. The resentments. They start insulting each other. They take it out into a stairwell, and they beat each other to a pulp. And
like super violent.
Incredibly
bloody.
Violent. Yeah. Great fight choreography. It's like The Raid with two women.
Yeah.
And wow. So Sandra Oh's character winds up in a coma for 2 years. We fast forward for 2 years, and now it's time for revenge.
Everything has changed.
Everything has changed.
She is penniless.
Well, we'll tell people what
this happened. Is the first act. There's a lot more to come.
I know, but there's a lot more to come, and the whole world has been flipped upside down for both of these women.
Yeah.
And she didn't get convicted or anything?
No.
The same first act as Death Becomes Her is what you're saying. Yeah. We just flip.
Yeah, there's no conviction Rosalini because here, what this film is a...
metaphor.
A satire. It's a metaphor about the military-industrial complex. In the background of this fight action is an ongoing story about the United States getting involved in a vague Middle East war, one that involves lowering the draft age to 16 so that we're essentially slaughtering teenagers to go fight this war that is seemingly predicated on money. And so well,
that's where Sandra Oh's husband's money is coming from.
Yeah, and his money comes from profiting off debris cleanup. Meanwhile, Anne Heche's stridently political art in the time of war becomes very popular, and she becomes very wealthy and famous because of this war. The film decides that being a war profiteer is, it's the same quality. You know, like I need to spit this out better.
It's equally damning.
It's equally damning on people who are defense contractors and people who are cultural critics, but who happen to make a living being a cultural critic.
As Dave said in his review, it basically says that Halliburton and The Daily Show are equivalent.
Equally responsible. And I disagree.
I concur.
And I feel as though I think that this film is not logical about this sort of thing. And it has a lot of really heavy-handed, blunt things to say in the service of satire, but it's really unfocused. You know, they're against he's against war, and he's against that kind of anxious helicopter parenting, you know, that you find a lot of in big urban centers. And he's against the art world, and he's against, you know, you name...
I wanted to ask you, because you're always a good go-to on this. Do they get the art world remotely right in this movie?
Not the art world I've seen.
Okay.
You know, we're meant to understand that that Anne Heche is a successful artist who gets her portrait on the cover of art magazines, and yet she kind of has her own gallery where she shows her own art, and that's not what happens. That's not what happens. You have if you're a big deal artist, Richard Prince does not have his own gallery where he shows his own work. He's at Gagosian or someone like that.
Right.
I don't know where he is, but you know, that's who shows Richard Prince. And they depict Anne Heche as becoming the kind of artist who's, you know, a household name.
Then she would have a gallerist, right?
She would have a gallerist. Yeah, yeah, she would have someone representing her.
Oliver.
Yeah.
Yes. I liked the sort of cheek of this movie. I liked the violence.
The violence is fantastic. The violence is amazing.
I mean, yeah, you don't see two women going at it in a movie like this. And they play it so over the top. I kind of dug that part of it. But you're right. Once you start scratching into what this movie's about or wants to be about or wants to talk about...
It's blunt and it's not sharp satire. It's a lot of it's very sort of tired material that you've seen in other places. I mean, When your satire about you know
late night television
anxious moms has already been done in the Sarah Jessica Parker film, I don't know how she does it. You should go in another direction.
And there's this recurring gag with Craig Bierko as a late night talk show host who has a show called The Fart Machine.
This very sort of sub idiocracy kind of thing that's not.
It's not.
Again, it's been done.
It's not subtle at all. It's kind of ham fisted. So
it works best when Sandra Oh and Anne Heche are insulting each other or brawling, because the title now, of course, is completely ironic. It's meant to evoke ideas of camp and of you know, the heterosexual male gaze, you know, where straight men love a good, you know, girl-on-girl fight. Mm. And gay men love a good, you know, Crystal and Alexis, you know, throw down in the lily pond. And that's the point is here that, you know, these women are going to kill each other. And not, they're not here to entertain you or to make you laugh or to titillate you. They're going to kill each other. But it still feels as though, you know, everything has been swallowed by the masculine. You know, there's no.
It
a woman did not make this movie or write this movie. Right. And that's a problem.
And it doesn't comment on the idea that powerful women are sort of encouraged to be at odds with each other. You know, I mean, I think so much of the narrative, like, when I posted your review on The Wrap, you know, I have to post links to other related articles. And I just put the word catfight in to see if we had covered it at all. And one of the headlines was Paul Feig, you know, told to expect a catfight during Ghostbusters shoot. And it's like, that's the thing. If two women are involved in a thing, the first question, oh, did they fight? Was there tension? Did they throw a diva fit? You know, and the movie doesn't touch that much at all. And I think I appreciate
what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
And I like these two women and their performances.
They give great, like, deadpan side eye. Like, yeah. You're right. Besides the actual fighting, I liked the lead-ins to the fighting where they're just circling each other and being, you know, sort of just verbally on the attack. Because they're both so, I don't know what the word I want here is, but there's a glacial power to both of them that I really appreciated, and they play off each other really well.
Well, you hadn't heard from Anne Heche in a long time, and
she's in The Last Word too, by the way.
She's
come back. Well, and she's coming back in. She got a series.
Yes.
I just read. And Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah, who is doing? She was also just in King Cobra. Alicia Silverstone was.
Yes,
and she's playing Kyle Richards' mother in the what is it?
I forget what it's called. It's Kyle Richards from the Housewives of Beverly Hills about their mother. She sold her
series. Oh, I thought you meant Kyle Chandler. I'm like, they're the same age.
No, Kyle Richards' mother. Okay. As those girls were young actors.
Oh, my.
They're doing it on, where do they do, you can cut out the pauses here. In Philadelphia, the Betty White and the...
Oh, FX.
What's that?
Do you mean the FX network?
No, what? It's not FX. It's where they do...
TV Land?
Yeah, TV Land.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hot in Cleveland. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I'm sorry.
No worries.
We had to get up really early.
It's all flyover country to you, coastal elites. Speaking of FX, Feud starts tonight.
Yes.
And speaking of catfights.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So I you know, again, it's like for all of my tisking about setting women against each other, I will be watching.
But it seems like with your point, though, if you're going to do that now, you have to do it well,
yeah,
better than everybody else, or approach it in a way that hasn't been done before. It can't be just the stereotype of men expecting women to not like each other.
Right.
Like a real historical...
Yeah, this happened. Yes, there are sources for this.
Yes.
So, a better movie about young women.
Yes.
Or women in general. Before I Fall, very surprising to me.
Yeah, from Awesomeness Pictures, of all people.
Yeah, I don't really know anything about them.
Well, they're the Awesomeness. I think this might be their first theatrical film, but Awesomeness TV is all over YouTube.
It's the same folks.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Really?
That's where what's his face? Okay. Cameron Dallas was on one of their shows.
So, I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, yes. What an even bigger surprise,
Right?
Yeah, because well, anyway, the this stars Zoe Deutsch. Leah Thompson's daughter.
Right. Whose dad directed Pretty in Pink.
Whose dad directed Pretty in Pink, yeah. Wow. Zoe Deutsch plays a Heather. She's a mean girl. You don't know she's a mean girl until, you know...
She doesn't know it either.
Yeah, you don't know she's a mean girl until around 5-10 minutes into the movie, which I know is immediately, but she's presented as, oh, she's cute and she's nice and she loves her friends and... They all go to school together one day, and then lunch happens. And
That's where you know who's who.
That's where you know who's who. And suddenly you're thinking, why are they saying these terrible things about these other kids in the cafeteria? Am I supposed to be liking these people? Wait, Are they the? Is she the heroine of the movie? She's awful. And then that night there's a party. And they go to a party. And a kid is humiliated by them at the party. And it's, now it's like 15 minutes in. I thought, I'm walking out of this movie. I know it's a press screening. I can't deal with this. Because if that's what this film is, you know, I'm supposed to side with this girl. And she's rotten. What happens? Well, 3 minutes later, she gets killed in a car accident.
Oh, it's good you waited.
Yeah.
Patience.
Yeah. In fact, she and apparently all her friends get killed in a car accident. I don't know. But she gets killed in a car accident. And that's when it turns into Heathers meets Groundhog Day and Edge of Tomorrow. She has to learn the same thing.
She wakes up and it's the same day all over.
She wakes up and it's the same day again. And she has to start it over. And at the end of each day, she gets killed in the car accident. And so she has to figure out why this is happening, what's causing the car accident, and what's wrong with her and her friends and the entire school that she's a part of, and how she can perhaps alter the future by becoming kind. So it's not bad.
I like the idea.
It's not bad. And now, it's
better than the Shirley MacLaine had to be kind.
Apparently so, yeah.
It's better than this film I saw last year called If I Stay.
Right.
That starred who?
Chloe Grace Moretz.
Chloe Grace Moretz as a girl
in a coma.
Who in a coma who has to decide whether or not she's going to stick around and live or die. Mm-hmm. And she goes and lives these possibilities out in the world in her coma. And it
taps into that teen girl Huck Finn's
teen
Tom Sawyer's funeral thing, yes. Of like, oh, they'll all miss me so much and they'll be sorry, yep. And you know, that kind of thing,
where when you get a to child,
eat your cake and have it too, you
right
know?
Yeah, no when you're a child you don't think about your death, you don't, it doesn't, you're not,
it doesn't have meaning,
it doesn't have meaning,
right?
You don't really understand the idea of mortality, really, like I said on the radio the other day, unless you're Wednesday Addams, you know. Like, but when you become a teenager, that's when you understand that death is a thing. And of course, as a teenager, the first thing you do is turn it into a narcissistic exercise about how I will die in a beautiful manner and all will be sad.
And the world will remember.
It's this romantic, you know, thing. So If I Stay exploits that in a weird way that I found sort of ugly. This one's still, your phone is buzzing.
It's because
craziness.
I'm on this Outfest chat group, yeah. Even though I'm not at Outfest today, but they're all talking to each other about, oh my God, is the theater clear? And yeah,
so the,
I'll turn it off.
Yeah, turn that off. It's interrupting me.
I'm so sorry.
No, so this one dives into that romantic teenage fantasy about death. But it does so in the service of something kind and something thoughtful. Now, it's a little weird at the end. I won't tell you the ending, and it's a bit unsatisfying where it goes. It's, you know, it's essentially a fantasy film anyway. But I sure did, you know, not hate this. I was surprised that I didn't hate it.
Young female filmmaker named Rye Russo-Young. Did you see her first movie?
I did not.
I didn't mean either.
No.
Okay. Just curious.
So this one is, it's not
it's
terrible.
Not exactly the pull quote you want, though. I did not, yeah, not hate this. Well,
practically a rave for these two. What are you talking about?
Here's the thing.
We see a lot of
last year a film in 2015.
We got to save our chits.
Sorry, in 2016, a film came out called The Edge of 17.
Yes.
With Haley Steinfeld. A fantastic film about
teen alienation,
being a teenager and narcissistic and alienated and kind of a dick, you know. And that's who Haley Steinfeld's character slowly comes to realize, that she's a pain in the ass. Before the end of the film, she comes to realize that she's not so great, even though everyone else around her is annoying her and she's alienated. She
needs to calm down.
She needs to calm down too. Right. Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yes.
Because I have it's sitting on my table right now because I got the screener.
She gives a performance that should have been nominated for an Academy Award.
Agreed.
That's a fact. I mean, there's no such thing as a fact in subjective film criticism, right. But I'm right. Yeah. And so
I agree.
This one does not traffic in actual life. It traffics in fantasy. For me, it's not as important a film. But you know, if you're a kid, you're a teenager, there are plenty of worse things to see out of movies right now. Yeah. So.
So the big one of the week is Logan. Which is, we are promised, the last of the Wolverine movies. And on the heels of Deadpool, it is an R-rated superhero movie, which is, at the moment, a novelty. But given that first Deadpool and now this one are making F-tons of money, I think we're going to be getting a lot of R-rated superhero movies very soon.
That would be cool. Yeah.
It will until it isn't. I mean, you know, there is something, it's like, I don't know if you guys ever have to watch PG-13 horror movies. For the most part, they're really terrible. And one of the things that's so annoying is, like, someone will have their throat slit and there will be a drop of blood or something. Right. You know, it's like, no. And there's something about seeing an R-rated superhero movie where you realize, oh, yeah, this is like a world of violence and people beating each other down. And, like, the PG... PG-13 movies have been way too scrubbed up. So when Wolverine sinks his claws into someone's head in the first 5 minutes, you're like, oh, that's a thing that would happen.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
Yeah, they just don't show it to us, you know.
Right.
So it's directed by James Mangold, who did The Wolverine, the last one, which was set in Japan. This one is, it takes place in the future. It's 2029. It's a world where the mutants have mostly disappeared. Logan is working as a chauffeur in El Paso, right on the Mexico border. He is hiding Professor X in Mexico, and Professor X is having these seizures that sort of mess up the minds of everyone in the vicinity. So he's having to keep him on these meds to sort of calm him down.
They are really good seizures too.
Yeah, they're pretty impressive. And the implication being the mutants are gone. Like they're not being born anymore. They've been rounded up. They're not around. But Professor X starts insisting that no, there's a new one, and she needs our help. And indeed, this girl shows up one day, and it turns out that she and Wolverine have a lot in common. And so then Wolverine has to go on the road with her and Professor X to get her to what may or may not be a safe haven.
Yes. And there's so much killing.
Mm.
So much killing.
Yeah.
The little girl who plays Lara, her name is Daphne Keene. It's like a first movie. And she doesn't speak.
And she's intense.
And she is intense, yes. A nonverbal performance from essentially a 9 or 10 year old child. And it's really stunning to watch her hold the screen with Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart. And really, like, you're looking at her more than you're looking at him or Patrick Stewart, because everything is going on in her face and not coming out around. Eventually she does speak, and it's, you know, it's very cool what they do with her when she speaks.
Patrick Stewart dropped some F-bombs in this movie.
Oh, yes.
Like, you can tell he was just thrilled to get
to it. We're going to get our rating. Yay. if you want to see, like, a star is born, this child is really something.
Yeah.
And I love this movie. It is, I believe now, probably my favorite superhero movie.
Wow.
And maybe it's because this feels so refreshing. I'm not the biggest Deadpool fan. Mm. I liked it. It's fine. It's funny, you know. But it felt inconsequential. Mm. This feels like a film that should be made. And then they draw on a lot of, you know, Western movie mythology, and very specifically
Shane.
The movie Shane. Where dialogue, you see clips of Shane, and there's dialogue repeated from the film. And in a way that is sort of like, you know, like a Clint Eastwood Western almost, like an Unforgiven sort of thing.
It's a very kind of elegiac, you know, he is We've never really seen a movie about an old superhero, so it's like his body is giving out on him. It doesn't heal as fast as it used to. He's got to pull the claws out all the way sometimes because they don't want to come out all the way. Like, it is very much that kind of, like, latter-day Clint Eastwood, like, one last burst of glory from this guy who's about to drop dead at any moment.
Between the violence, there's the slow-moving sequences that are fairly quiet, and just people are talking. And it feels as though the stakes are as high or higher than the 37 end-of-the-world scenarios that I've seen in all the other superhero movies that I've watched. Which, after one end-of-the-world superhero movie, and the world doesn't end, you think to yourself, oh, I guess the world is never going to end because the franchise can't end. And so nothing at stake anymore.
This does benefit from being like, again, they keep saying this is the last Logan movie. Not having to, like, set up the next three movies liberates them in a lot of ways.
Yes.
I like this movie a great deal. I don't say I don't love it because so many people love it. And I think there are
I think I'm in the love camp.
No,
this and Get Out. That's the two big studio releases so far this year. Shockingly, happening in February and March, and they're both great.
I think this movie's really good. I found it a little draggy in parts, and I didn't find it as... I kind of wish that with that R rating, not so much the R rating itself, but the we're aiming this at an adult audience, we can do a different superhero narrative. And a lot of it felt not all that removed than what you would have gotten in a PG narrative. I mean, it's a road picture. It's a, you know, the bad scientists are chasing us stuff. A lot of that just kind of felt like, well, this could have... You could have maybe done more with this or taken it somewhere else. But
people die
definitely
in this movie in ways that I didn't... Well good people die in this movie. And that was a shocker to me as
definitely.
Well. I'm not going to get into too much
detail
about
there's a lot that I like about it, and I absolutely recommend it. I think people would enjoy it. I just am less gaga about it than a lot of people I know. I want to point out, there's an actor in here who I really like, and he's one of those actors who I like because I never recognize him in a movie. Or I'll watch him and I'll think, oh, that guy's really good. Who is that? And I'll look him up and I'll go, oh, it's Boyd Holbrook.
Oh, yeah.
Who plays the main guy going after them.
For a second, I thought it was Garrett Hedlund.
Yes, I did too.
I was like, oh, Garrett Hedlund's in this movie.
He was in Gone Girl. He's one of those guys where, like, you look up his IMDb page and you realize you've seen eight things that he's in.
Is he related to Hal Holbrook?
I don't know.
I'll look that up.
And Dixie Carter? I don't know.
It's a Holbrook?
Holbrook is his last name, yeah. Boyd Holbrook. But it's like how Justin Theroux used to be before he kind of became like a writer all the time.
Right.
You know, you'd see him in something like Charlie's Angels Full Throttle and then on 6 Feet Under and, you know, the Broken Hearts Club. And I never recognized him from movie to movie. And so many actors create this kind of screen persona where you know exactly what you're going to get or you recognize them immediately. And I really admire those character actors who are willing to just do a total 180 and just not care if that you remember that you've seen them before. And this guy's just always good, and I never connect him from movie to movie because he just creates this whole new thing every time.
He is not related to Hal Holbrook. Okay. He was a carpenter in Kentucky when he was discovered by elite models, and then he went on to walk in Jean-Paul Gaultier shows.
Aha.
So there you go.
Well, that worked out.
Yeah. Well, I'll look him up now.
Yes. No, but he's terrific.
Rather attractive.
And he's like sort of the main nemesis in this movie and is really creepy and just, you know, there's a sense of menace there. And I just like him a lot.
And that's it?
And that's it.
That's all the movies. And we're not going to do letters.
We'll spare you all that.
Although I do want to say, I need to say something to two people listening.
Yes.
Ray Mansfield, thank you
for
that art that you sent us of us.
It's extraordinary.
It's
show you guys
blowing my mind. I don't know how you did it. You're going to get a personal thank you card in the mail.
Oh.
It's gorgeous and it's complicated. Yeah, I don't know how you do this.
I don't know how he accomplished this, but thanks.
Yeah.
Also, Tim from Starbucks.
Yes.
Who are you, Tim from Starbucks? We met you yesterday. We don't know your last name.
But we
at
know,
all.
We know you live in the neighborhood.
So contact us so that we know who you are.
Thanks for saying hey, for all the kind words. We appreciate it.
We were at Starbucks yesterday and a listener found us And that never happens.
Yeah.
And it was nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. Real quick, I won't go through the whole litany of all the other shows I always recommend, but I do want to say, if you're on YouTube, go check out Paul Tran Baker Man.
Oh, yes.
Our good friend Paul, who has a PhD in political science, but now he's a baker. And he is doing these really informative how-to videos. He just did, for Mardi Gras this week, he had a how to make a king cake.
Yep.
And he will sort of walk you through how to make stuff on YouTube. So that's very cool. You can subscribe to us for free at iTunes and leave us a nice review, please.
Yeah.
You can stream us on a whole bunch of places. I won't list them all this time.
Also.
Yes.
I know where you're going next.
No, you...
Don't I?
No, I guess not.
You're going to talk about Patreon?
I'm not there yet.
Okay, but you're going to get there.
I will.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was what you were going to say next.
Okay. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. You can also PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com to get one of our Linoleum Knife t-shirts. White letters on black.
That's right.
We have all the sizes. They are $22. If you are outside the U.S., email us first and find out how much more postage is.
Yeah.
And please join our Patreon page.
Yes.
patreon.com/linoleumknife. Now y'all crowdsourced for a very sorted wedding. Is there anything at the moment that you are looking for?
No, we just want people to buy tickets to the movie.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yes. Opening weekend in Palm Springs. Like, we want that big box office.
All right. So if you are in the desert community in the inland, not the Inland Empire, right? Yeah, that's a whole other thing. Is that the Inland Empire?
It's all the other desert cities.
People are flying in from everywhere for this premiere. It's really cool.
And when is this?
This Friday night, the 10th, is the big premiere. The premiere is sold out, but we've added a second one on the 11th with a lot of the cast, myself and Emerson. And Emerson's terrific in the movie, by the way. And
yes, we failed to mention
that's right
that Emerson plays a serial killer.
Yes,
yes,
in this movie,
teardrop face tattoo and everything.
Yeah.
Testicles, you know, important things.
quite impressive. Thank really, you. As a
wasn't
as
it
a
transformation?
A, quite yeah. impressive as a scary murderer. Yeah,
based on those boys from growing up back home.
Yes,
where is back home for you?
Waco, then Houston.
Oh well, all right.
Oh, Waco. Yes.
So you know
these people. Yes.
Yes.
And Dell has a little M. Night Shyamalan little cameo in there. If you keep your eyes peeled.
Oh, you saw that? Yes. Oh, well, you know I do that alter ego Jimmy Dale on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's just a redneck who's a little sexually confused. And so he has a lot of commentaries from Smyrna, Georgia, and he's on YouTube. You can find him.
Oh, I gotta look for that.
He just talks about, you know, he's a big Republican, but doesn't like Trump, and he warned him before it all happened, you know.
where are all the places we can find you guys online? What's your YouTube channel?
It's just Del Shores. Everything is at Del Shores. If you just Google me, you'll find me
at Del Shores,
on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm retweeting Trump a lot these days with my own comments back to him. And then, of course, on Facebook, it's facebook.com, Del Shores Fan Club, and, of course, facebook.com, A Very Sorted Wedding for all of our Sorted Wedding.
And Emerson?
And mine is at Actually Emerson on Twitter and Emerson Collins everywhere else.
Okay. And you were on the, I'm blanking on the name, your Bravo show.
People's Couch.
Yes. What's the future for that? Or is there one?
We did 4 seasons. I think it's unlikely at this point. I don't have an official word because they don't cancel anything. So I'll show up and sit on the couch if they have us back. But if not, we're a little busy with this movie. So.
They don't cancel things? They just leave you hanging?
They just sort of like, it just doesn't.
Yeah. They just stop calling?
Yeah, there's no.
If you don't hear for a couple of years, you think, well, maybe.
I guess. That's all right. Now with this new Mask for Mask look, I'm trying to get work as an actress. So.
Nice. I wonder if those NYC prep kids are still waiting around for the second season.
Probably.
Maybe.
They're in college by now.
No, I know. Oh, did I not tell you I read a whole article about them all now in college and how chagrined they are?
Good.
At what? Well, no. They. I swear I talked to you about this.
Maybe
it was even on LKTV.
This vaguely rings a bell.
They're all in college now, and they're all like, we can't believe this happened to us, because obviously none of the stories were real.
Yeah.
They were all more or less completely misled as to what the show was going to even be. It was apparently a nightmare for all of those kids, and they wish it did not exist. It was poor. And they were all like 15, so you can't really blame them.
That's true.
You know, Yeah.
Reality shows.
Did you guys watch that show?
No, but unlike the Vanderpump Rules kids, they have no excuse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, and I can't say that I don't watch that every week. So just
I watch all that stuff every week.
I'm
addicted to all that stuff.
I'm a reality junkie. Yeah. Me too.
Dave loves him some Little Women.
Oh, yes. I'm going to have to...
Shaws of Sunset are my actual friends. I don't know any of them personally, but they're my friends. It's just a matter of time until they understand this. Yeah.
I got blocked on Twitter by Jax.
Yeah. Actually, I'm an Asa kind of guy. Like, I tweeted. She's my lady.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell me off, Mike. All right. Dell and Emerson, thank you so much for being here. This was a delight. And everybody, go see Very Sordid Wedding. If it's not already in your town, it will be getting there soon. So go to the Facebook page, go to the website, verysordidwedding.com. Find out when it's going to be there. Best of luck, you guys.
Thank you so much for having us. This is always fun.
All right, cool. We'll have you again soon. Take care.
Sit with smart people.
Bye. And in the meantime, we'll do. Okay. Bye.
Goodbye.